novembre 2008. Al Centro Culture Contemporanee Strozzina di Palazzo Strozzi abbiamo incontrato Dan Perjovski, artista rumeno invitato a partecipare alla mostra Arte, Prezzo, Valore. Il lavoro di Perjovski esplora i nessi fra arte, società e politica, ma per parlare del lavoro realizzato a Firenze, la nostra conversazione parte da più lontano, e cioè dalla scorsa Biennale di Venezia.
Let's discuss about Venice. Actually, this is a follow-up because I made with this kind of non-fixed stuff, chalk and charcoal, and people erase it. That was the intention, but at the end of it, it was pretty trashed, human level. At the level of human, everything. So now here I just use the same technique. I erase it myself, as if it was already kind of consumed. So there are sections you saw, which are kind of, wiped out a bit. And that came from the images which were left after the Venice project. You see, I just got a space which was problematic for the beginning because this is a historical building. And so in order to host contemporary art, they put walls, and I don't like constructed walls. I like original architecture to get on. So we had a negotiation. So as you saw, there is a part which is on a built walls and a part which is really the wall. So then I had to also accept not to work with permanent markers, which are more black, more solid, and more tough as statement. But with charcoal, which is like natural, right? So they can be wiped out, washed, and then repainted. This work here, it's a bit different than usual, because usually I go to some place, I just improvise. And here, because I know the topic, and I was asked to work on the topic of art and system of art and money and, you know, market. So I just recollect some of my previous drawings who refer to this topic. So it's not so much about Florence as usually I do when I go in a place, but it's more about the topic of the exhibition. So there's a lot of drawings around, and they kind of overlap. And because the space is very small, and I grew up accustomed with huge spaces like this one here, all the whole palettes will be kind of enough. I made also like a difference in kind of line. So you have to be very near to the wall to see some kind of very delicate statements, and then you go further back to see the strongest ones. That's also a way to enlarge the space somehow. And it's also like a credit to the art history, because it's more artistic than usual. Usually it's just I have just one language, bam, bam, from one corner to another, the same kind of amplitude of tone. Here are different voices talking on the walls. Tougher and, you know, delicate and stuff like that. So it's a kind of melange. So this will be like a little difference since compared with other projects. But in general terms, it's the same practice I do. I draw directly on some stuff, and after the show, this will be gone. That's the main critic about the art market. Now when I look in retrospective, it sounds logical, but it was a process of about 10 years. But when I did it, it was not so coherent. So, you know, as an artist, you are trying things. Maybe it makes sense now after you did them, but in the process of making them, you're not sure which is the best, you know. I'm coming from, you know, from a post-communist country, so I grew up and I formed myself as an artist in a dictatorial society. So I know what it means to don't have information and not be allowed to express. So now in democracy, I try to profit about expression and, you know. They gave me room to be nasty, to, you know, be vocal. So I just had to find a tactic for this kind of urge. And what was happening around me in politics and social life was much more interesting than what was happening in arts. So I was fascinated, and because at the time there was no art market in my country, I formed myself in a, let's say, activistic platform, newspaper, you know, political, social. That were my platforms. And something from that kind of language I still have. And because I had to somehow illustrate texts which were referring precisely to political and social life, so I got kind of metabolism to answer this kind of, you know. Since then, I'm still reading newspaper and watching news and stuff. That was one urge. And then at a certain moment, what I was doing as a job for a newspaper and what I was doing as an artist was kind of coming together. But it was a long process. And then somehow my drawings become more and more close to graffiti and maybe to like art brute, uneducated art. I'm over-educated, so I had to compensate somehow. And that's how it's now. When you are in a museum, you are presumably addressing yourself to at least well-intentioned public. They are coming to an art museum. When you are doing, we are doing a drawing in a political magazine, you know, it's quite open to the public. It can be anybody with no aesthetical training or no, absolutely no reference to art history or whatever. So I had to somehow to find a language who can match these requirements. And somehow that language from the newspaper is also working in a museum now. It was not the other way around somehow. And because now graffiti is very hype in my country, it's very cool. There is a big difference between me and people who are doing graffiti, because I'm coming the opposite way. I'm going out of the museum into the streets. They are trying to get it coming from the streets in the museum, you know. So it's an opposite. I'm trying to bring the cultural platform and knowledge out in the open, and they are trying to rebel, you know, and to crush the establishment. So my base is very cultural. I grew up illustrating or drawing about books and literature. I did a very extensive studies. When I ignore now composition rules and stuff, I do it consciously. I try to get out of what I've been framed to think. This can be like a humoristic thing here in Italy, maybe in Chile not. I've been placed as artist, you know, traveling around, work in Cyprus or, you know, in other contexts. So, and I realize it's not the same understanding of things. I'm European kind of Western construction in my head, you know, art history reference, everything, you know. So I had to adapt, if I can, to these places. About taboos, I've been specifically asked in Moscow not to touch the Orthodox Church. So you can do whatever with Putin, with whatever, but but I never do. If I do something, let's say, I will never do something directly, maybe to Berlusconi, but I will do to directly maybe to the idea of a leader, maximum something, you know, the idea of somebody who knows everything. I did some drawings about, but not specifically the Russian Orthodox Church, but in general the Orthodox Church facing the Muslim world. And so I did some kind of references. And I'm a maestro of innuendo and nuances, because the communists teach me. It was impossible to say at the time, so you had to develop some kind of allusive language. There was a lot of films in Eastern Europe who do this metaphorical, very heavy now to watch, statements, because they could not say straight. It was a censorship who cut their art, so they tried to, you know. So I'm master in this. Actually, I didn't ask here because I'm a little bit familiar. In Europe, I'm familiar with what's going on, Italy, France, Germany, whatever the core nations. But usually I go and I ask the curator if there are some kind of topics which can be problematic, because my intention is not to do like a scandal. I don't trust in this artist scandals in arts. They are media manipulation, you know, and they always, the discussion goes nowhere. So, like do you remember some, like, months ago, there was like a big protest, or half a year. Somebody from Latin America put a dog in a gallery, okay? So it was a big protest on the net, and what they came up with as a solution to forbid the presence of the artist in a biennale. That was the answer of the net condition. How come? So you're replacing some kind of stupid statement with a censorship. That's completely bad. And that's because, you know, nobody asks why the public didn't feed the animal. You know, the artist can put a very stupid question, but if you as a public answer stupidly, that's yours. Anyways, I'm not into this. So I try to make the curator confident and comfortable. And I'm also aware, and that's one of the problems for the graffiti and all this sometimes activistic movement. It's so easy to throw stuff into the public space. You just throw ideas there. And as if you don't have any kind of responsibility, but you have. You know, I manipulate the concepts. I have a responsibility. So I try to stay in the line, but challenge the limits. It's the same like with the space. I usually got very shitty spaces, as you saw. Entrance, lobby, staircases, you know. All. But I try to somehow to conquer more, or to, you know, they gave me the frame and I try to a little bit. It's very complex story here. It's a very complex. I hated the discussion with the Mahomet cartoons. That was completely stupid from the Danish part, but also the Muslim were doing a stupid answer, trying to do the Holocaust drawing. Nowhere, you go nowhere with this kind of stuff, you know. So I try to stay more into an intellectual level when it's something like that. But you see, if you listen to the public, you'll never do a drawing again. There's no way to protect everybody. So at least I had now the understanding that anything you do can make people happy or sad. But at least I know for sure that I somehow shake a bit. I'm the Romanian stereotype. I don't know the truth, so I know the reflection of the how the Romanian media read the facts. And they will read the facts in a very scandal manner. Anyways, I did hear, it's not like a drawing, it's like a text saying that I don't kill, I don't rape, I don't beg, I don't sing, and I'm still a Romanian. So it's about that, that's probably the stereotype. Although, you know, this is also how you understand stereotypes, because they can be very positive, you know. I mean, we always take them in the wrong side, no? In some kind of a negative situation. No? Coming back, I just presume some stuff. So I did this kind of drawing, and I usually do this because there's a lot of my fellow Romanians singing in the world. Or begging. So sometimes I witnessed quite interesting event. I was in a tramway in Basel, in Switzerland, and it was like a gypsy from Romania singing. And then the loudspeaker from the driver of the tramway in front was saying something in German I didn't understand. And the guy stopped, apologized, say, "They don't let me to sing for you. I have to go down." And he went. So. And I did a drawing about the two artists in Basel. He who was censored to speak, and me, which were paid to draw. So it's the same here a little bit. If you go here in one of these, you know, squares, there's like a band, from a gypsy band, who's playing Greek music. Anyway, so it's like a very confusing stereotype in a way. I did these references because although I don't have the real data of the story, and I don't know how this can be done. And I will do some references about this idea of Berlusconi to put the army in the streets, which is a kind of very interesting sign. You know, it's also a sign of control. It's not maybe effective, or is, I don't know, but it's a visual sign of control. When contemporary art is like valued 10 times more than some kind of Renaissance, or, you know. So here you have a Chinese painter which worth more than, you know, Renaissance painters, then you start to wonder what's going on, huh? Or, you know, it's like in football, just look. So they are spending millions on footballers and they never score. It's like the same here. Like, I think we reach too much. And somehow, now it's a crisis coming from economics, but I'm absolutely sure that without the economical crisis, one connected directly with the art system should happen also. It might be now problematic, but in general terms can be good, just a big shake. And I think also, it's not only the stereotype, it's also a multiple factor effect. Just you've been, because we discussed this Venice Biennale, so you remember the next step was Basel Art Fair, right? So this is not accidental. And this become boring, this become, you know, so people try to, a lot of people have nothing to do with the arts, or maybe they are just, they're sniffing money, and for them, like Venice is a preparation for the Basel Art Fair. So why we end up here? Because this kind of big institution like the Biennale in Venice or big museum or something, they are supposed to protect the art on the money pressure and on the political pressure, no? You are supposed to create with this institution a platform where the cultural idea can flourish free. So I think we end up in a very complicated thing. And there were too much money, nobody stayed to wonder. Too much, they just jump on it. So they, you know, blue chip, they invest in art. I mean, you know, you have enough money and you can create somebody. So that's not a stereotype. This is like real facts. Of course, I'm part of the system. And I'm also grateful to the art market, but not only the market. I'm grateful to the fact that I can get money out of my work. And this gave me independence, gave me some kind of, you know, stability. And this is made either selling my work or like doing this project. So, you know, I get a little honorarium, and with this kind of money I can survive. And this is also part of the money flow, no? I think we have to think about maybe what's the reasonable limit, since things, you know, get pretty complicated. And this, just understand me correctly, you know this piece of Damien Hirst with the Swarovski? I think that's quite interesting as a statement, because if you are capable in this world to create a work and the production costs a million or whatever, this is a very big and interesting statement about the art market and about the society in general. So I'm not having nothing against the work in itself as a statement. Although I'm not fascinated by it as a value, as a kind of aesthetic or whatever, but as a statement, it's quite interesting. We end up here.
Cambiamenti sociali in Romania, arte e mercato. Non potevamo non chiedere a Pergiovski come vede la scena dell'arte rumena, quella generazione di artisti successiva alla sua, composta da quei giovani che si sono formati dopo la caduta del regime di Ceaușescu.
They are trendy, they are cool, they don't have any problem, you know, because they don't have this kind of historical past, and I think some of them will fail magnificent, and some will do some interesting stuff I cannot do, and I even cannot comprehend. So I can give you an example. We had in the 90s, after the change in my country, you know, kissing, you know, revolution, fantastic. Like in about 6 months, there was like a certain issue and the country was split in two, and the political power used a part of the society, the minor from the underground, they bring them in Bucharest to beat the students who were protesting. So it was like a small civil war. That happens in the big fight and battle, and you know, this kind of criminal acts happens in one of the central square in Bucharest. And in order somehow to refresh the memory of my compatriots, I did a project last year, like a kind of living sculpture with one minor and one student. And it was no action, it was just standing, people standing like that and moving like every 15 minutes, like no boring, no action, no nothing. It's just two figures there for a week. Now the people you ask, they schedule like some months after, like a pillow fight, a pillow fight in order to commemorate like the events where people died for like freedom of expression, and you know, so that's my comment. I will never do this, and I hate the idea, but maybe because they can, maybe the way we all look to history in large, and we can have irony or we can mock something which for me is sacred. It's not comfortable to be a young artist nowhere, because it's like fresh flesh, they chew you, spit you quick. So in order to resist to this is complicated. But on the other hand, I grew up with no books, with the impossibility to travel. And I did a very shitty school. So they have a lot of books, they can travel wherever they want, and they even can exchange semesters between schools, right? So they have everything on the table. In a sense, it's a big responsibility for them. The question is, why we speak English now? I did not realize, but somehow my drawings got more text lately. And the text is part of my drawing and vice versa somehow. So I just use the language I know and which creates for me the maximum access. But if I'm in my country, I use Romanian. And if I'm in France, because I know French, I use some words in French and German. And even here, probably I will do something. So I try to be very careful to use a very simplified English, like the one you can get from music or, you know, from films or, you know. I mean, I don't see it as a problem now. That's the way. That's it. It is. I'm speaking with my fellow Bulgarians, artists, through English. That's our language. And I speak with everybody through English. So maybe in 20 years we all have to learn Chinese, but until then... Now I do a project in Prague. I'm doing now. I start the first part, and it will be several parts, and it will be like a drawing which will stay forever. It's in the library. It's a public library in Prague. And Czech people are not known to know English very much. Like Italian, right? This is a stereotype, but you know. So I try desperately to use a lot of drawings which have no text, you know, so it was more simple. But this is the most I can do. Try to use the ones which are not with the text. Here I didn't control, I just put them on. And when it's Venice or Biennale like that, you are supposed to have an international public. And by the way, in our days, all this kind, even if a small institution, contemporary art institution, wherever in this Europe, has an international public too. That's very interesting. This is a kind of international platforms. I even don't think about the language anymore. I just use it. You see, sometimes I look in my notebooks, because every project you see, the basis is a kind of a notebook, you know. So I look into, and sometimes I don't understand what that drawing means or to what is referring, you know. So there are some drawings of mine which are very specifically, and they can be historicized and dated like in a week. But there are some which will stay, and I think forever as meaning. You know, when you touch something which belongs to, doesn't matter the society. You know, well, I started to do it in Prague, and I said, that's a technical library. And I did some drawings with, you know, computers. And I said, but maybe in 30 years, you don't know how the computer will look, right? So you start to wonder what it will be, huh? How it will be. So probably a lot of that drawings will become like history, you know. They look at that, how the dresses were, like in Middle East. But the majority, which when I succeed to touch a little of something like from the core of the humanity, it will stay.
radiopapesse.org